It's time. It's time to open your eyes. It's time to open your mind. It's time to grow up and face reality. It's time to lock and load because it's Meat Trapper time. Hello everyone and welcome to episode number 207 of Meat Trapper Radio. And I am coming to you today a little early. Now I always have to record these episodes in advance these days, but even a little earlier than usual. And I'm coming to you today from the banks of the Red River in northwest Tennessee. I finished up work today, and I'm fortunate enough to live about 15 minutes from a put-in on the Red River, and had my kayak preloaded in the truck, everything strapped down, ready to go, so punched out and jumped in the truck, and here I am. And before we get into tonight's show, I want to make a little announcement that Brian McKee of Southern Snares is introducing a new line of trapping products. And, you know, the honest truth is if you go and you get five different trap supply catalogs and you start thumbing through them, you're going to see pretty much the same stuff made by the same people for pretty much the same price. And there's not a whole lot to distinguish one trap supply place from another, you know, until you get into something like Snares and Lure. And Snares are the big differentiator with Brian, as well as the level of personal service. But, like I say, he's not only becoming a major player in the trapping industry, he is changing the trapping industry. And one way that he's doing this is he has introduced a new line called Performance Trapping Gear. Now, performance trapping gear is more than just a marketing label or a slogan or something like that. It's going to be an entire line of high-quality premium products. It's not going to be the same old that's available in every catalog. And the first offering on this is a new product called Bulletproof. And what this is, Bulletproof is a trap and snare dip. It's a clear dip that gives you a rock-hard protective service, and it makes your snares fire extremely fast, and it protects them from the rust and the corrosion, the wear and tear of life on the line. And so I'm going to be doing a video and be doing some testing on this. And if you'd like to get your hands on it, or if you'd like to see my snare making demo, make arrangements to be in Western Kentucky, the middle of July, second week in July. I'll be at the Western Kentucky Free Trappers. We're having a COVID convention, and so I look forward to meeting anybody that can make it. But the way I'm paddling today, since I don't have enough time to make a round trip, you know, to put in at one put in and take out at another take out, that's the nearest trip is about 6 hours, and I don't have time for that after work. So what I have to do is I have to put in, then I have to paddle upstream, and then I have to get to a certain point and turn around and float back. So I've been paddling upstream for about an hour now, and the current is pretty swift in places. And it gives you time to think, because, you know, paddling upstream is a lot like life as we know it today in this country. For those of us who are liberty-minded and freedom-minded, it feels like we're paddling upstream constantly. Everything is filled with stress, strife, difficulty, lies, fabrications. And anybody who speaks the truth is attacked, assaulted, pilloried. And we're watching the entire nation crumble before our very eyes. And as I was paddling upstream, the first thing that I noticed was that if you stop paddling, you stop going forward and you start moving backwards instantly. And so as we move forward through our lives, through this period, you can't stop and rest. You can't rest on your laurels because you're going to be swept backwards. And then the next thing that I noticed was that there were times when I would enter a narrow part of the river and the current would be very swift. And it would be very hard to paddle. You're making very little progress with each stroke. You can look over to the side of the bank, and with every two or three strokes, you move forward a couple of feet, and you're fighting hard. But eventually, you get through the little neck, the little narrow channel, and you open up onto a little bit wider place in the river, and the current slows a bit. And the lesson there is, like in life, there are going to be hard times and there are going to be rough patches. And if you just double down and you dig harder, you'll get through them. And then you'll come out the other side. Now, it's not going to be, you know, free sailing on the other side. You're still going to have to paddle. You're still going upstream. But you have a chance to catch your breath and regroup. And then from time to time, you'll find little eddies on the river, like where I'm parked and sitting now, where I can peel off and get up in a little eddy and get behind an obstruction and get out of the current, where I can just sit and rest and I'm not having to paddle. The little pools of calm on the river, little pools of calm in life that we find. But of course we can't stay in the eddy forever. Otherwise we're trapped. We're stuck. So I didn't mean to get all philosophical on you, but I know that there's a lot of stress and a lot of tension, a lot of strife and a lot of anxiety out there, and it's only going to increase. So as you go about your daily business, just remember you're paddling upstream, but eventually, as long as you don't quit, you'll get there. Now, the first topic I want to talk about tonight is I want to say thank you to everyone in the Patreon community who set me straight about my thoughts on buying my niece her first firearm. If you didn't hear that episode, I have a 20-year-old niece, college-age niece. Has always been a liberal because she's A, female, B, young, and C, in college. I mean, what do you expect? But with everything that's gone on, her eyes have really been opened, and she came to me the other day and asked for my help in purchasing a gun and learning to use it. And so I was just floored by that. I thought it was great. And what I'm going to tell you is a story of tunnel vision and how I am as guilty of it as anybody. Because I had mentioned that one of the things I was thinking about as far as a firearm choice was a Ruger LCR, the little 38 special revolver. My thinking, based on, see, this was my personal centric thinking here. You know, for me, it's a drop-dead simple weapon. There's no safeties or anything to operate. You know, it holds five rounds. You put the rounds in it and point it and pull the trigger, and that's it. You don't have to worry about magazines. You don't have to worry about is it round chambered or anything like that. But as everybody, and it's lightweight, you could slip it into your purse. A young woman would never know that it's there, and she would always have it with her. But of course, what everybody was rightfully pointed out was that the recoil is sharp. You know, because it's, I mean, that's common sense. When you go to a lightweight weapon and you have a self-defense round in it, there's going to be a bite of a recoil, and that's unpleasant for a lot of people. And if it's somebody's first gun, you can end up making them afraid of the gun because it kicks so hard. And that's something that, see, that never entered my mind, because I'm thinking of it from my perspective and not from a young woman's perspective. And so there were a lot of great suggestions. You know, people said, you know, if you're going to go with a revolver like that, get a steel frame revolver. You know, get something a little heavier, a little beefier. You know, not going to have as violent a recoil, because you want the person to get comfortable with it. You want them to look forward to going shooting and not to be afraid of it. And then there was even one gentleman, and since we're on the public side of the broadcast, I'm not going to mention any names or anything, but there was one gentleman who said, you need to look into something like a Glock, a single-stack Glock in 380. You can get those things. They're very, they're very small. They're ultra-reliable. And if you're not going to worry about magazine changes, it's basically stick the magazine, rack the chamber, and then you have an automatic revolver. And I thought that was great advice. I had never really stopped to think about those things in such a way. But really, that is true. Once you get the round chambered, it essentially becomes a revolver for all practical purposes, in that, nobody's going to, she's not going to be worried about magazine changes, carrying extra mags in the purse and all of that. And once the thing is loaded for the first time, it's just as simple to operate as an LCR, and it'll have a lot less recoil and very reliable. So anyway, I thought that was just great stuff, and that's the kind of people that we have over in on the Patreon community and the tribe, and that's why I always recommend that people consider joining up, because it's just a superior group of people, and see, they had no problem pointing out the shortcomings of my thinking, and you know what? I'm grateful that they did. That's rare these days that you have a group of people that can do that. Thank you to everyone who chimed in on that, and I appreciate it. I think you not only saved me from making a mistake, but you helped a family member, and for that I'm grateful. Now also, last time I had discussed LBE and the difference, my thinking. Barry had done a thing on summertime gear, a segment on summertime gear. He always does great stuff. And then I had chimed in on my thinking between LBE and chess rigs and all of that. And of course, also in on the Patreon community, we have a number of law enforcement people, number of active duty military, retired military, combat vets, and guys that know what they're talking about. And one of the things that I wanted to share with you was, and like I say, I'm not going to mention any names because this is on the public side of the broadcast, but he said, here I go rambling again. If this runs long, I'll send you an email. He said, as to your discussion of the LBE or 782 gear, as it's known to us old Marines, all the points covered are spot on. The Sheriff of Baghdad, John Shrek McPhee, just did a podcast about the various equipment that he used as a Delta Force operator. It's great stuff from a highly experienced guy. And he goes on and he was talking about the military surplus LBE, the Alice gear. And he says, if you use the military surplus stuff, cut off all of those hooks and replace them with paracord. It's quieter and it won't catch or dig into you. I thought that was great advice right there, because if you've ever used the LBE, man, it's, Uncle Sam did not plan that stuff out with your comfort in mind. He planned it out to go to the lowest bidder, and he planned it out to last as long as humanly possible. And, man, those hooks, those metal hooks and all of that crap, that gets old. And that's just a great idea right there. Because, everybody has paracord, everybody's going to have extra paracord, and that's it's a hell of a lot quieter than the metal hooks, so great stuff. And he goes and he talks about different manufacturers now, because, there are all these manufacturers like Tactical Tailor, he mentions them, Hill People's Gear, they make some great stuff, all of that. And of course, you're getting into money then, I mean, there's a huge difference between the 1995 military surplus gear and the Tactical Tailor and Hill People gear stuff, because all of that stuff is being made new. It's being made by Americans, and it's being made first quality. So that's good stuff. And he also had some good insight on my comments as far as cops going back to using SAPs. Now, if you'll remember, I talked about how in the current use of force continuum, We're seeing all of these people get shot because, you know, they're on drugs, they're crazy as hell, and you know, they start fighting the cops pull out the taser. The taser works sometimes, sometimes the taser doesn't, and if it doesn't, then you got to shoot him, you know. And if you had something that was more effective than a taser, and I mentioned, you know, the old nightsticks, nightclubs, batons, all of that kind of stuff, you know, and they did away with all of that because you got to be nice to people. And in the process of being nice to people, you end up getting them killed. But I also mentioned saps and blackjacks and talked about that. But he also had commented here on that. And he said, it takes very little. He said it takes very little force when using a sap to break a bone, especially if you give somebody a headshot. And that's true. You hit somebody in the head with a sap or a blackjack. At the minimum, you're going to fracture their skull. At the maximum, you will kill them. When you pick up a sap or a blackjack, depending upon the weight, like I've got a 16-ounce slapper. That's basically. Think about picking up a 16-ounce hammer and hitting somebody in the head with a 16-ounce hammer. That's basically what a sap does. Now, the difference is the flat slapper, you can hit somebody with the flat side, or you can turn it to the edge and hit them with the edge. And it does two different things. That edge is capable of breaking a bone. You hit somebody with the edge of that thing, and it'll snap their leg, you know. But you can also hit them with the flat side of it, like on their quad or something, and it causes excruciating pain without breaking a bone. But you do have to be trained in it. And he said, you know, if you want to just see what it's capable of doing, take it out and hit a 2x4 with it. You know, put your force behind it, hit it with the flat side, hit it with the edge side, and actually see what it's capable of doing. And that's all good stuff. So if you decide to go that route, you need to make sure you know how to use it. And there's a great book. I need to put it up as a bonus material. I'll do that. I'll make this PDF as a bonus upload on Patreon. And it's an old manual on training police on how to use the SAP. And it's only a few pages because you know, there's only certain strikes that they show. And how to use it and where to hit them and all that kind of stuff. So I'll do that. So anyway, I certainly appreciated all of those comments as well. Now let's see. The next had an interesting email, and this is also from one of our Patreon members. And let me share his thoughts. He said, "Hey Tim, enjoying your shows. Don't get discouraged, as I know it's easy to do. Remember, life is about change, good or bad. What makes you a winner is how well you adapt to the change. You can't be a dinosaur. You got to be versatile and adapt. Go back to the book that you had mentioned earlier on Quanah Parker. And Quanah was an Indian, and I had done an entire show on Quanah Parker and how his entire civilization collapsed, and yet he was able to prosper after his civilization collapsed. He said, yeah, Quanah Parker was a good example of that. He said, I'm glad to hear that you're not giving it up because of what Patreon is doing, and that's a good analogy with the Ford Motor Company and et cetera, et cetera. We can't control everything. It's the message that needs to get out, and that's what's most important. If they stop the message, well, then it's time to change tactics. And he goes on, he wanted some advice. He said, I'm thinking about trying out my summer land trapping skills. I have a property that I feel no one would report me on for trapping. As a matter of fact, no one will know I'm in there. I want to experiment more with this skill, so I'm confident I can catch my food year-round regardless of weather conditions. My idea, though, is not to buy any more lure, but to use the lures that I already have and see how well they work on different species. For example, I plan to try my luck using beaver lures containing castor and other beaver lures like Beaver Plus to see how raccoon, coyote, fox, and bobcats react to it. If I can be successful, why carry a bunch of different lures? Maybe just two or three for everything. It's just an experiment. Maybe you know some great lures that can work on both land and water. Castor-based lures come to mind, but you may know of more. And he goes on, and he had sent me some pictures of his garden and some, man, the lima beans he sent me. I love cowpeas and I love lima beans, especially those big butter beans, man. But he has a real talent for that stuff, and I'm jealous. But anyway, to his question about summertime land trapping and summertime lures, and what he's getting at is there a multi-purpose all-call type of lure? Is there some, you know, is there a raccoon fruit lure, a beaver caster lure, or something like that that you could put out that you could really use as sort of an all-call type of thing? And, you know, people have tried everything. They've tried, you know, fish oil and bacon grease and, you know, everything that you can think of under the sun that smells, people have tried. And really what my advice is, and this is after fooling with this stuff for 20 plus years, I would focus on blind set trapping. No lure. And the reason I say that, number one, is you're going to be hard-pressed to find a lure that works all the time, even for one species. You get into a situation where, you know, a gland lure works during some times of the year for coon, then you need a food lure and, you know, different things like that. But if you can master blind set trapping, then you don't need a lure. You don't have to worry about it. And blind set trapping works as well in January as it does in July. And it will make you a better trapper. It will make you a better tracker. Now, if you think about snaring, you know, you don't use lures when you snare. Snaring is blind set trapping. You know, when you set a snare, you're setting a snare along the animal's travel way, the line of travel, whether they're swimming in the water or walking on the ground or what have you. And so your snaring is a perfect example that you can apply with conibears and footholds. I mean, if you're walking down the creek and you see coon tracks, you can put a snare there, you can put a conibear there, you can put a foothold there. Doesn't matter. Because you know where the animal's going to be. Now, the lure is designed to pull the animal to a certain place. And there are times that I agree, there are times that that's needed. For instance, if I'm out in a vast, trackless piece of flooded timber, the beaver can swim anywhere. So, yes, I do use a beaver lure to pull them past a certain tree that I've gotten a snare hanging off of. So, my advice, if you're thinking along these lines, is master the blind set first and then worry about putting a couple of lures in your pocket. And also don't forget that you can have visual attractants, visual lures. You've got glow-in-the-dark lures. Yes, they work. You can make a visual attractant just by scattering feathers on the ground. Or having something like a ping pong ball that looks like an egg. So, you know, when you start thinking about lures, substitute the word attractor. And when you start thinking about attractors, that opens up a whole new thing. People make cat flags out of old CDs that they hang from a piece of string. You know, they hang turkey wings up to get the animal's attention. You've got glow-in-the-dark stuff. You can scatter feathers on the ground. You know, you can even make your own beaver slide. You run the hand up and down the bank, slick it up with water, and hang a snare in it, you know. So there's a lot of things like that. But I believe if you will master that blind set, it will make you a better trapper, and it will reduce your dependence upon lures. And that way you're just way ahead of the game. And like he had mentioned, he wants to be able to put food on the table regardless of season. And blind setting will do that for you. So now we are going to move into the second half of tonight's show, and we have got a lot. We're going to talk about permanent traps. Some examples of if you have land or you have a home or you have a private area how you can make a permanent trap that will be there day in, day out, year in, year out, and will produce food for you. I'm going to share some news about one of our Patreon members that was in a wreck, car wreck, and the rage that they experienced. We're going to talk about the level of anger in this society and what you need to be aware of. And then we're going to end the show tonight. We're going to hear from Barry. He's done a segment on his stealth boat design and thought process. And then I'm going to chime in with what I'm looking at. Because I'm telling you, people, I'm hearing from a lot of people that are picking up thermal sights and going to be shooting from a boat. And I'm going to tell you exactly what's going on. So anyway, if you're a tribe member, stay tuned. And if you're not, I would like to ask you to consider becoming one. You can go to patreon.com/meattrapper and get signed up. And you'll get access to everything. We got all kind of movies and books and resistance trapping videos and all that kind of good stuff over there. But the main thing is just to support the broadcast, to support our efforts, and to become part of the finest group of individuals that I know.